Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Got one.
Here's John Williams.
Actually, I've got some tickets for you. We'll worry about the big thoughts later. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. 18 stories above the Chicago River, overlooking beautiful downtown Chicago. A little cloudy today, but it's a pretty city, and there's this this great big lake over there, too. We're pleased to be talking to you all the way until 3 o'clock today, 10 a.m. till 12 noon on Saturdays on social media. I am WGN King John on Insta, Twitter, and on Facebook. We post a news click, a daily web poll question on our website, and we also post that on Facebook, too. Lots to do on the show today, including a visit with Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic of the Chicago Tribune. Michelle Nichols is going to join us from the Adler Planetarium. I am fascinated by the idea that they think they found liquid water under the frozen surface of Mars, which I think is the same situation they have under the surface of one of the moons of Jupiter. All the way out to Jupiter, you think, boy, I'll bet it's pretty cold out there, John. I don't want to live there. But there may be life under the surface of a moon orbiting Jupiter. And the reason it's warm enough for there to be water is that in the center of these planets and moons, just like ours, there's hot magma, there's a hot core. And so even though it's very cold on top or on the outside, underneath, it could be warm enough. In between the warm and the ice, they may have water. And if they have water and it's warm enough, they could have, you know, people, fish, things. Who knows?
Kind of like us.
There could be versions of us swimming around under there. Who knows? This will be fun. In the last half hour, where will you be at 2:30? I've been to a few of these arts and crafts shows and sort of juried art shows, like at the Randolph Street Market. They did one at the park at Wrigley. They did one at the Morgan Manufacturing event space. And a couple of them keep popping up at the same places. These are local artisans who make things that I think are pretty cool, like a guy who manufactures Chicago-made and designed watches, a guy that does a really good local barbecue rub and sauce, our friends from Sweet, the coffee, the cheesecake place, and some others as well. So we're going to introduce you to them and tell you where their links are. And if you want to, you know, maybe buy something or have something, give a gift to somebody that's Chicago made, we'll do that at 2:35 here on WGN. By the way, the news click yesterday, Jason Van Dyke, that Chicago Police Department officer charged in the shooting death of Laquan McDonald, fears he can't get a fair jury trial in Chicago. We asked, do you think Van Dyke can get a fair trial? Elif, what were the results on that, please?
Yes, 36. No, 63%.
63% no. Most folks say no. I would say yes. I mean, sure, it looks bad because he's kind of guilty, but can he get a fair trial? I think generally the scales are tipped in favor of the police officers on these sorts of things.
But that's the problem right there, is that people have already made up their minds before the trials even started.
I guess what I just said is proof that he can't get a fair trial. I mean, because a fair trial means a fair trial. It doesn't mean that you're going to get off with it or that you're going to be found guilty with it. It means it's a fair trial. And
that you don't have preconceived notions.
I know. So actually, I'm probably evidence, even though I think guys like this tend to get away with something like that. That means then it's not a fair trial. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I'll tell you what. Can he get a fair trial? 63% of you said no. Something interesting happened. You heard about it in the news here on WGN Radio today. Ryan Burrow from WGN is in our studio. Hi, Ryan.
Hello. I'm doing well.
You were at the Willie Wilson thing.
I was. I wanted to see what this was, how it was going to play out. And so people,
Willie Wilson is a philanthropist,
yes,
businessman.
Businessman, and he's got some cash, and he's willing to give it out. And he's also, a mayoral candidate right now, and he's in the process of going on this campaign where he's giving out money. Two weekends ago, he was at a church on the south side of Chicago, gave out hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash to people as they lined up.
And checks.
And as people were coming off the streets, he was just giving it to him. He says he does this all the time. He'll go to Lower Wacker down here, hand out $100 bills to people just because that's in his heart. It's in his nature. And, you know, this is a story where, you know, it kind of plays a little bit on the emotions of the people who are receiving it.
Okay, so then he said, though, after he was handing out the money on the South Side to predominantly, maybe exclusively, African-Americans, some of it was Governor Rauner's money, by the way, he got an email from somebody, and they said, I didn't see any white people who are poor getting your largesse. Why aren't you doing that? And he shrugged and said, maybe I should. So he was in this studio earlier this week and said, I'm going to start handing out money to some white folks.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and he thought this was a way to do it. So he went to the county building today and decided he was going to pay people's property taxes in the county. $500.
Yeah.
Yes. $500 to 300 people, and he was hoping that that would also bring out Latinos and white people and Asian people. And based on my observation, it was still predominantly African-American people that were in line there. I mean, I guess I had in mind that it was going to be.
I was wondering about that. I mean, literally, how do you determine the race of some people?
Yeah,
it's not always clear, but he said white folks. It wasn't exclusively white people. What was it, more than half white people?
I only saw maybe a handful of white people there. I don't necessarily know, because he had said that
they wanted to make sure.
Because these people had to pre-register before they went there. He wasn't just going to give this to anyone who walked up. This was going to be pre-register on the foundation website, 300. And the reason was probably he had 300 checks cut, and, you know, he only had so many to go around,
okay,
I guess.
Okay, so then how did it work?
So the people would get in line. He came out, said his piece, went back in. Some of the media missed it, so he came back out and spoke
again.
Yeah, I did it for Carol Marine and, you know, Fran from the Sun-Times, you know, did the whole song and dance, and then went back in there. And basically, the people would walk up. They'd give their name and identification number. They'd match it up with the pre-registration list. They'd say, okay, yes, you are on the list. Here is your check. It would say $500 on it. They would slide over to the treasurer's desk that was right next to them, and the treasurer would look up that tax code and give them take the check and give them a $500
credit. Apply the $500.
You got it. And I was talking to people on the way out, and I said, what do you make of all this? And majority of the people said, you know, this is what he does. He's a philanthropist. I'm so grateful to have this money. And they don't think it's political at all. That being said, many of them said, vote Willie Wilson on their way out.
Why would they want to vote for Willie Wilson? You know, I don't know that Willie Wilson's going to be the next mayor of Chicago. You're not supposed to buy votes. He said, I'm not. He says, I'm not telling people to vote for me. You didn't hear him say that.
Nope.
Was he wearing a campaign button or anything like that?
Nope.
And, boy, I don't want to be so cynical that I look down at anybody who, for whatever reason, is giving $500 to people that are strapped for property taxes.
Sure.
We did a whole half hour yesterday with one of the reporters from ProPublica about how people in Chicago declare bankruptcy. Listen to this, because they can't pay the fines from not having a city sticker. You know, if you get too many of those for your city sticker, then they cancel your driver's license or they boot your car. But if you declare bankruptcy, then they won't do that. So even though they probably, a lot of them don't have $200, but it's not the $200. It's the loss of their car
that's
terrifying to them. So they declare bankruptcy to keep their driver's license and to keep their automobile so they can keep their job. But just think about how hard it is for people in this city that don't have $200 for a city sticker. So if somebody wants to hand out $500 checks, we should be applauding that.
Well, and one woman I talked to, she's from Cicero, and actually she was a white woman in line. She said that her property taxes went up $900 last year. And I said, so $500 would help? She said, absolutely it helps. But, you know, the message that Willie Wilson said and kind of announced to the media is that the politicians are the ones who are raising all of these costs. So, I mean, as much as he's saying this isn't political, he did bring up the fact that these politicians are to blame for increasing property taxes.
Without saying I'm running for mayor.
Exactly.
And, you know, and he's right about that. He's also, I don't know that this is his point, but let's face it. If you have a home in Chicago or a business, that is below the median line, you are almost certainly paying more than your fair share in property taxes. It's the Joe Barrios problem. Mm-hmm. They're not properly assessing these properties. So if you don't have a lot of money, you're getting it double whammy. You're probably being overcharged on your property taxes, and you don't have enough money to pay your property taxes.
It's like I said, it's kind of a weird because it plays on your emotions. You want to be cynical. The other hand, too, you want to realize, too, that, you know, he's putting smiles on all of these people's faces. And so after the checks, and this process went just a couple minutes. I mean, it went really fast. Boom, boom, boom. Check name. Here's your check. Okay. Applied to your credit. And he was standing downstairs in the lobby as people were coming down the elevators after going through the process. And they were all coming up and hugging him and shaking hands and saying, thank you so much. And I'm like, there's your campaign video right there, right? I mean, it's almost perfect, but there were no cameras around for this. So, if he's just doing it to be a good guy and he's been doing this for decades, as he says, I mean, it's his money, you know? I mean,
how much money did you give away today on the street?
Right?
But I wish that he would be teaching them how to lower their property taxes, or the idea of, you know, give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, teach him how to fish.
Yeah.
You feed him for a lifetime. So it's like, or, you know, I botched that up a little bit.
No, I bet I get your point.
But,
and
if he's been doing this for so long and he just gave out $150,000 today, why not put that in a program to help the community or help the people that need the help instead of just handing it out?
I don't have anything to say to that. I get your point.
So that's how you could look at it a little bit more
cynically if you want, but I don't think you have to.
I just wish he was helping.
You tell the people that just got $500 that didn't help.
Are they going to come back next year for another $500?
Maybe they are. I would. And if somebody wants to give me $500, I don't think they or I have done anything wrong. Now, would it be better if these people weren't being overcharged on their properties? And that's not even his point. His point is, even if it's a fair assessment, some folks are just strapped.
Sure.
So what are they going to do? And if this guy wants to give them $500, let's let that happen. Who else has been doing that lately?
It's a different approach, you know. I mean, it's a person to person approach. If you and I are walking down the street and we see someone asking for money and we choose to give that person money, that's a very personal contact, hand to hand contact, and that's what he's doing. But he's doing it with people instead of creating like some kind of massive industry or corporate entity that's funneling this money. He is actually the one who is passing
that.
This money over. And it's a bizarre scenario, but it's also pretty touching when you watch it happen.
Okay, I have thought of something cynical to say. Will this make you happy, Violetta? If he was a more viable candidate, we would be looking at this with a more jaundiced eye, because he's doing it for all the reasons that maybe you and I are hoping. But he's also running for mayor. If Bruce Rauner was doing this, Rauner was funneling it through a church, but just imagine if Rauner or JB were showing up at churches or community centers and handing out $500 bills to people to help them out while they're running for governor. We would say that sounds fishy. And this thing does, but since nobody thinks Willie Wilson's going to be mayor, they don't really care. It's just okay.
He's the underdog. You want to cheer for him.
I know.
From the other cynical perspective, too, he just won the day, right? What did Mayor Rahm Emanuel do today? I don't think in Eric's news it was anywhere in there, but Willie Wilson is probably going to win the news cycle for the day, right?
Very few people thought Donald Trump was going to win the presidency.
Willie Wilson's not going to be the next mayor of Chicago. Shut my mouth, right? I don't want to prejudice anybody's vote. Maybe he is going to be. I don't think he's going to be. Well, Ryan, it's interesting reporting, and it's been a fun story to watch unfold right here on WGN Radio this week. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Donald Trump was in Florida. He was doing another one of his rallies. It was a rally at which the crowd started to chant CNN sucks while Jim Acosta from CNN was doing a stand-up. The president's son retweeted that gleefully, and the president of the United States retweeted that. So Eric tweeted it, and then Donald Trump retweeted as though, isn't this awesome? An angry crowd is shouting at the media, CNN sucks. It is getting to be dangerous. Someone is going to get hurt, and the White House will not be able to wash their hands completely of the consequences of that if that goes down. But anyway, the president then was talking about voter ID, an issue near and dear to his heart.
We believe that only American citizens should vote in American elections. Which is why the time has come for voter ID, like everything else. Voter ID. You know, if you go out and you want to buy groceries, you need a picture on a card. You need ID.
Okay, that'll be $49.50.
All right.
Cash or credit?
I got a 50 right here. I'll just pay cash.
And can I see a picture ID?
Well, actually, I don't have my driver's license with me. I left it in the car.
Okay. Do you have a credit card or debit card?
Uh-huh.
Just slide it right there. Your debit card doesn't have a photo on it, sir.
I know. None of them do.
Sir, this is America, in case you didn't know it. You can't buy groceries here without a photo ID.
Since when?
Since, like, 1776.
No.
When Ben Franklin bought tea at the very first Walmart, he had a government-issued photo ID.
I don't think he did.
You go out and you want to buy anything, you need ID and you need your picture. The only time you don't need it, in many cases, is when you want to vote for a president. It's crazy.
I'm trying to think of the instances where you do have to show your photo ID anymore.
Buying booze or cigarettes in some cases.
Right, yeah. When they're checking your age, you have to show a photo ID. But I haven't had to show a photo ID at a retail place in forever. Used to write checks, and then they want to see your ID to make sure that it matches. But I don't remember the last time anybody's asked to see my photo unless they had to card me because that was the rule. It was just for my age.
I don't think they even asked for your ID at the bank.
Yeah, right. Because, yeah, no, they don't. I was just at the bank the other day. I was cashing a check, and they asked for my ID, and I need to know my debit card, and then I hit the PIN number, and then I'm able to get my cash. They never saw my ID. I haven't shown my ID in a bank in a long time, and I do a lot of face-to-face banking because I like to flirt with the tellers.
So I think your reaction and others has been that it shows the president's out of touch, and they bring up the George Bush gallon of milk.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that at all.
Why do you say that?
Because I think it's an example of him just making things up. No, I'm not kidding. I'm dead serious about this. Yeah. It's not about that he doesn't understand how you shop for groceries, you know. It's that he just makes things up to fit his argument, and that's what this is an example of. I don't think it has to do with the fact that he's never been into a 7-Eleven. I just think he is given to fabricating things, and this is another case of that.
Well, I think maybe he's mistaken the scenario, because the argument has been made, and it's interesting, isn't it, that if you buy Mucinex, one of our producers tweeted about a week ago that she went to buy some Mucinex at a drugstore, and she had to show an ID and then sign a waiver so that her name could be on a government database about the purchase of this particular drug. Think about that. She had to show an ID and sign a federal document to buy Mucinex, but you don't have to do that when you buy a gun, right? So there's this argument that's out there where we have to show some sort of identification for the simplest of transactions, and we don't for others. So I think Donald Trump is trying to borrow that sort of line of reasoning and saying, if you got to do it at the grocery store, then you ought to be able to do it to vote. And the crowd all went, and a Donald Trump crowd only has one answer.
I don't know. Listen to the crowd and see about that, because
the crowd all just cheered like nuts.
Did
right?
they?
Well,
did they?
Let me.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to it, John. But
oh, yeah, I do.
I heard others say that for the first time, the crowd sounded perplexed. I haven't listened to it for that, so I don't know if that's true or not.
40,000 people all went. Play the very first part of that. I don't want to do the whole bit again, Elif, but can you play the first part of that? Because you do hear the volume of the crowd at the beginning of this Trump bit at the grocery store. Hit it, Elif.
We believe that only American citizens should vote in American elections.
Right, but that's not him talking about the grocery store. That's him talking about the voter ID.
Right.
And I did watch it a couple of times, Steve, because I had to today, and it seemed to me like they were, I don't recall. I won't comment on that because I don't recall. In fact, Elif, just after the news, we're pausing for the news, but see if you can find the crowd reaction. Does it sound more like Scooby-Doo, where he turns his head?
And honestly, I haven't listened to it for that either. I just did hear others say, account it that way.
Yeah. Well, That's at least his analogy. Steve's got the news, and that's next. This is WGN. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Okay, so while you were doing the news, Steve, we were listening back to Donald Trump at that rally. You said you'd heard some folks suggest that maybe after he said, hey, look, when you go to a grocery store, you've got to show a photo ID, so you ought to when you vote as well. And when we listen back to it, you're kind of about right.
It's not me. I mean, I didn't hear it, but so they did sound a little I don't want to sound like I'm...
Well, it's hard for a crowd of 50,000 people to sound perplexed, especially when you're rallying around Donald Trump. I mean, I do think there's just two buttons up and down,
right? Right.
You know, loud and louder. And so they weren't... So maybe, you know, it happened quick
enough. It's probably a lot in the ear of the beholder, I would imagine.
Well, I think you're right about that. If they got his point, and they sure were on point, because at the beginning when he said, we need a voter ID, they just went bananas. And then his analogy didn't exactly work. But nobody said,
no, that's not how it works. I was at the Jewel the other...
No, no, that guy wasn't there.
No.
That guy wasn't there. In fact, we've been listening to see if Scooby-Doo was in the crowd. Do we have Scooby-Doo at all? No. All right. Never mind then. Because I do think it would have been great if somebody just went, oh. Phil Vitale is here. He's the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
As
or,
always,
if that helps.
I know that sound effect exists somewhere out there, and
sure.
I couldn't find it in the amount of time we had. So you wrote in the food and dining section of today's Chicago Tribune a review of Next.
Mm-hmm.
Right? N-E-X-T.
Right.
But you also had a piece strolling down memory lane to Alinea?
Alinea.
I want to say right. Alinea. Alinea.
Right.
So tell me a little about Next and tell me a little bit about Alinea.
Well, they're both in the same family. They're both part of the Alinea restaurant group. Alinea was the first restaurant and the acclaimed one, and at different times considered one of the best restaurants, still considered one of the best restaurants in the world. Next was their follow-up concept, which is why they call it Next, because here's what's next. And at Next, every three or four times a year, they just change the whole concept of the restaurant. They'll swing from doing French, specifically Paris of 1906 kind of menu, and then they'll go into Thai street food, and so on and so on, as they've been doing for almost 7 years now. And yeah, this time they got really introspective, I guess you'd call it, and they did, Next did the menu that was focused on the first 5 years of Alinea itself.
So Next then did a retrospective menu of Alinea.
Correct.
From when Alinea started.
From when it started,
and so
11 years ago.
What's that like?
That was very interesting. What they did is they took 5 years of menus, and they probably those Alinea menus then probably changed every month, and cherry-picked the dishes that sounded most interesting to them, and from that they sort of winnowed it down to certain dishes that would put together a progression that would make some sense.
So it's kind of a best of.
Right.
Imagine that. I mean, this is one of the best restaurants in the world to begin with.
Right.
And then what if they culled some of their favorite menu items from those years and said, why don't you try this, big boy?
Right. And the interesting thing is some of these dishes haven't appeared anywhere for the last 5 or more years.
So they did this?
Yes.
And is that happening right now? Can I go there right now?
Can
I get reservations right now?
You can get reservations right now on the online. They're in the TOC system.
I thought that you had to wait like months in order to get into Max.
Depending on when, depending on exactly when you want to go, but if you go on TOC, which is TOC, and you register in there, the nice thing about that is you can pull up months ahead and just look and see where there is availability,
yeah.
and plug in that way.
What's that going to run me there, Phil?
Dinner for two. I think the dinner, I'm going to look this up because I don't want to be wrong.
Is it $200?
$225 to start, all ranging up to $285, depending on the time and day you actually visit you sit.
So let's average it and say there'd be $500 for two.
Yeah, it would be that.
And then does that include coffee and dessert?
It'll include coffee and dessert.
Will it include my wines?
It will not include your wines.
What do you think? So what would you suggest I order for wines on that?
I would suggest just going at the wine pairings, since you don't know what dishes are coming.
What will that add to the bill?
Probably another $165.
Per person or for the two of us?
Per person.
So three, so eight.
Scooby.
Where Scooby just walked
Scooby
in.
Never paid that. He never paid that kind of money for a Scooby snack.
No, right, he's always got the munchies. So.
Wait, that's Astro. Never mind.
So we're at $8.50, and then the tip you do 20%.
Well, it's actually rolled. They actually have what they call a service charge. They don't go with the traditional tip. They have a service charge that is part of the prepaid.
I don't normally dwell on this, but I think it's relevant here because. This is one of the great restaurants in the world, one of the great restaurant groups. It's right here in Chicago, and it'd be nice if people could avail themselves of it. If you're going to make a special occasion out of it, you ought to know going wide-eyed in what you're going to be getting into.
Right.
You're going to have indigestion if you don't know. So you probably need $1,000 to eat there for two if you're doing it right.
That's probably fair. You can get away with less, but you can do it.
But you can't get away for less than... Well, 500. I mean, that's
right.
That's okay. We'll have the two dinners and a glass of water. Don't do that.
You're right.
Don't which be that guy.
Which you can do. You can be that. You can skip the alcohol altogether.
Well, maybe you're alcoholic. Maybe you just don't drink alcohol.
They
Whatever.
Have alcohol. They have non-alcoholic pairings. Really intriguing dishes where they're mixing all these different elements together that you would never expect.
What an interesting idea!
Right, I had one with there was a pea and ham dish with lavender aromas, and they put together a drink with some raspberry and sumac and dill and a little touch of molasses to sweeten it up, and that was the drink. And it was wow, that was really interesting.
You know, I'm so intrigued by that.
Yeah,
you know, you mentioned it, Phil. That is. Much as I'd like to have great wine with this historic meal I'm going to have, I might just order some of the non-alcoholic drinks because I can always order a good bottle of wine somewhere.
Right.
But I don't know that I would have somebody do something that perfectly paired non-alcoholic with the food I'm eating.
What I did is I had my wife order the wine and I ordered the non-alcoholic pairing. And except for a couple of furtive sips from her glass, I just stayed with the non-alcoholic that night and tried all these. And you just have no idea what kind of flavors you're going to get.
It's funny, though. So after all of that, I'm just reading your review here. You gave it one star and said you didn't like it. I didn't like it at all.
Don't say that.
Grand Etchets, if you're listening, sorry. Better luck next time. But... swing and a miss from Phil Vitel. Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. It's four stars.
It's four stars, yes.
It's a four-star review.
Yes, it's a rave review.
Yeah, no kidding.
As it should be for this kind of... I mean, it's very expensive. It's a commitment. But when you're considered one of the best in the world, if you go to any of the other restaurants out in Europe that are considered among the best in the world and eat there, you're going to spend that much money,
so
too.
So sprint me through the menu, then. First, you get iceberg lettuce and a tomato wedge with some blue cheese.
First, you get peanut butter and jelly.
Seriously?
That's the first thing you get. It was the very first dish they ever served at Alinea back in 2005. It is a single peeled grape that has been coated with peanut butter, and then... They take brioche toast crumbs and hot gun it to it to get all crunchy like toast, and that's served still on the grape cluster. Only there's only a single grape left, and that's held up in place by a specially designed for them wire apparatus that holds it. So in one bite, you get the peanut butter and jelly experience. And that's the whole dish. One grape.
Wait, is it the whole grape or just the skin?
It's the whole grape. There's no skin. They took the skin off.
Oh, they took the
what
skin.
If you wanted two
they
grapes?
Peel it for you.
If you said, boy, that was good. Oh, I'm all done.
Right.
If you wanted another one of those grapes, what would happen?
They'd kind of look at you quizzically. They might go ahead and bring it thinking, wow, he really doesn't get this concept yet. Let's keep him happy.
I know. All right, now we got to get another trapeze and set the grape in there and roll it in the crumbs. All right, fine, whatever.
Fly it out to space, bring it back.
Okay, so I don't have time for the whole menu, but can you sprint through some of these items?
Sure. They had this oyster cream topped with lots of Ocetra caviar and little slivers of lychee on top of it. They had this spectacular hearts of palm dish, another one of these dishes that at Alinea they were designing implements just to serve and eat the dish. They weren't just putting things on a plate. So they had made for them these little inch and a half, 2 inch tall pedestals. And they had the pedestal tops had little curves in them, and into each one of them, five rounds of hearts of palm, each one filled with something different. There was pureed pumpernickel, and there was vanilla. it just went on and on.
So that so you worked your way through. How many courses was this?
I'm counting about 20.
And so how long does it take to eat a meal like that?
I think we were out of there in about, I want to say 4 hours.
Was that too long for you, Phil, or was that a fun four hours?
No, I made my reservation for 6 o'clock. I was ready to relax. It might have only been 3.5, come to think of it.
Yeah, sure. And so then you just get a little grape, and you go, okay, that was an interesting visual right. and sensory experience and taste experience. And then how long before then you get course number two?
Oh, I don't know, a minute or two.
Okay, so they keep it coming.
Oh, the pace
right?
is, yeah, they do the pace very well. You're not sitting around.
Because you know how it is at a normal restaurant. Most of us get a salad, and then we wait for our steak and potatoes.
Right.
And there's a few minutes in between, but I mean, if I had to wait 10 minutes in between each course, I would not enjoy that. You know,
sure.
You just got my salivary glands going. Let's have some more food here.
Exactly. Well, they're smart about that. If you're just having the one bite, you're not going to wait a long time for the second one. If you sat down with the squab, which comes about halfway through the meal, and with little bits of Thai long pepper and some oxalis.
How many bites was that?
Oh, that's. That was good. That was a good 2 ounce piece of meat. I think.
That okay, was, that so that was something you could cut and work with a fork for a little bit,
right?
So that was squab. That's a bird.
Yes,
squab.
Yeah,
is a
little
bird?
Wild game bird.
Got it. Okay.
So it has red meat. It's not white meat.
Got it. And was that the main course then, if you will?
The way they structure this dish, this menu, they actually go all the way from the early tastings to the heavier meats, and then a bit of a sweet, like a dessert.
Right.
And then they start all over again. So you go about eight or so courses in, and you get this little thing with watermelon and fresh coriander and Middle Eastern spices on it, and then they go back to smoked salmon and a little salad kind of thing and crab meat with cashew. And coconut.
One thing was just as fun as the next, huh?
Right.
You just loved every bit of it.
Right. The funny thing is, I was at Alinea when it first opened. I mean, yeah. 10 days in, I had a table in there. And so some of these dishes were dishes I had way back then and, of course, haven't had for 10 years. So it was kind of, I knew it was a nostalgia trip for them. I didn't realize it was going to be a nostalgia trip for me.
You said that you were there once for, what was it, an 18-course, 5.5 hour, or 28?
Yeah.
Here it was. Yes. he liked to play with his food, basking in a 5 hour, 28-course, mind-blowing meal. That was
right.
Alinea way back when.
Right, when they first opened, and nobody really knew what to expect. They had hints, those of us who had been to a Trio in Evanston when he was working there,
yeah.
that it was going to be this kind of experiment. The first thing I ever had from him from Trio was an ice cream sandwich. That was the first course, except it was olive oil ice cream in the sandwich, and the waiter said, the chef recommends a little pour of sherry with that. And I was like, ice cream sandwich with sherry, of course.
It's a start.
Don't have to tell me that. And it's olive oil ice cream, which is, I've never had. So, of course, when he says the chef recommends it, you say, yeah. Let's go.
He said, yeah.
I'm not going to second guess this guy. He's on another planet right now.
Yeah. Phil Vitale writes about food in the Chicago Tribune. If you got a question or a comment about that or some other restaurant, maybe back on Earth, the number's 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Among the texters, Phil Vitale is here, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. You can read him online at chicagotribune.com/dining or look at today's paper. We're going to talk about a picture in the paper in just a second, Phil. The texters include this one. We booked for our upcoming 30th anniversary. They didn't say if it was Alinea or Next. Your review is of Next, and then you recalled an Alinea experience you had. But this person said, we prepaid $1,085 for the dinner for two, which sounds about right.
Right, depending on, because there are three, there are two or three levels of wine pairing you can go for, so that can add to the cost. And then after all that, then they add the 20% service charge.
The next texter says, hey, John, no meal is worth $1,000. Well, $1,000 dinners are like basketball players. They're worth it if they can get it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would never pay $1,000 for a meal. I'd like to eat one. I'm not going to pay $1,000 unless my income goes up substantially in the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have $1,000 for a meal. So I'm not going to judge you if you want to spend your money that way. If it's worth it to you, it is. But then
exactly.
The food had better be pretty damn good.
Well, everybody's got their trade-off. I will spend that sort of money, but I don't think I've ever paid more than $30 for a shirt.
See, I've spent $200 on a shirt.
See, there you go.
And you must think I'm a fool.
No.
But
no.
I get to wear that shirt all the time.
You get to wear that shirt. It's your perspiration. You're happy with it.
But you know what? I don't talk about that shirt a lot. Whereas if I ever had a $1,000 meal, you'd know about it.
Right.
I would tell that story over and over again.
You're not going to sit down at a table and say, let me tell you about my shirt.
People come up to me at cocktail parties. Ooh, do you have an expensive shirt? Tell
right.
us about
wow.
it.
Wow. How much did that shirt cost?
Well, I don't have it anymore. But let me tell you, I was at Nordstrom's.
Right.
And it was just an amazing experience.
What right. do you hang it on?
Wood. I would never put it on wire. Are you kidding me? Get out of here. I'm out of time. We have some phone calls for you. People just asking about that experience. You can read about it in the Tribune today. And look at picture 2 on the right-hand column of page 2 of the Trib. In the restaurant or dining section, because there's the hot potato, cold potato soup, which you say is one of your all-time favorite dishes.
Right. It's participatory. It challenges your taste receptors. It's just a way awesome dish.
It's dining meets mechanical engineering. Phil Vitale writes about it in the Chicago Tribune. Phil, what fun. Thanks for coming into our studio
Any
today.
Old time.
I hope so. In fact, listen, if you ever want somebody to go with you to one of these places and their wife can't make it or something like
right.
that, I'll be your guy.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
Got a lot here today.
Here's John Williams.
Yeah, we got all kinds of things going on. Phil Vitale's conversation, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, has spawned a whole host of texts about how much money you've spent on something. That's kind of fun. A lot of you had a lot to say about the president's proverbial visit to the grocery store. He said, you got to show an ID. And then we made fun of that, but a few of you, in fact, many of you have texted in and said, well, these are the instances where I have had to show an ID. Because I said I never have to show a picture ID, right? Use your debit card, you go to a bank. When's the last time, except when you are buying alcohol, maybe you buy tobacco, when have you had to show a photo ID? Well, some of you have said you guys are wrong. You have to show an ID for medical insurance. I don't know what they mean by that. I don't know when I've...
So if you go to a doctor's office...
I don't... I've not... I do that enough.
You think you have to show an ID to show who you are?
Maybe. Boy, I don't recall having had to do that. I sure don't at the dentist.
Don't they photocopy your ID and give it back to you every time you go to a new
Well, they'll
doctor?
Do that with an insurance card, but then I think when you show up, you have to show an ID just to show who you are.
And a lot of you are saying, we have to show our ID at the bank. I'm sorry, I don't have to show it at my bank. If you do yours, so be it. But that's not... universal. John, you need a photo ID to buy ammunition. Another one said at the doctor's office. John, Bank of America asked me for my ID, even though I've been at that bank for 20 years, because they changed tellers. I see different tellers all the time. I'm telling you, they don't ask for my photo ID.
None of this is relevant, though. I mean, the point is the president said that you should have to show a picture of yourself in order to vote, which I think a pretty big majority of the country opposes.
Yeah.
And then to back that up, he said when you go to a store, you do it all the time.
And Sarah Sanders was asked about that, and she said, well, it was about beer and wine at the store. That's what he meant, which is absolutely categorically not what he said or even inferred. But if that's what he had in his mind when he was doing that little riff, okay, fine. But I guess all of this is going down the wrong road. It's not about grocery stores. It's not about the president using imaginary examples. It's about should you have to show a photo ID to vote. And the crowd roared with approval at his rally in Florida. That doesn't necessarily mean it reflects the views of most Americans. My understanding is most Americans are not on board that. But that wasn't the point. John, hooray for Space Force. The president also said that he wants a Space Force and a past, Secretary of the U.S. Air Force? Is that the title? Who's in charge of the United States Air Force? Each branch of the military has its top person.
I think it's a secretary.
Secretary of the Air Force.
I think so, yeah.
The past Secretary of the Air Force said that nobody in the Air Force wants a Space Force. John, how many lives, this goes on and on and on. And a lot of you were saying things about Phil Vitale's conversation about can a meal be worth $1,000 or $1,200? Phil said, well, I have the luxury of my work subsidizes these meals. John, I'm cheap, yet I do triathlons and have spent thousands on bicycles. This says, John, I spent $250 on a bottle of beer, Utopia by Sam Adams. John, I'm pretty low-income millennial, but I went to Next for under $400 for two. It was worth it. Not mind-blowing, but it was worth it. John, I spent $400 for an Andrea Bocelli concert twice, and it was worth every penny.
Well, okay. That's the thing. When you want something, it's worth it.
Yeah, but you could be disappointed, too, right? Like, maybe the concert wasn't that good, or the food wasn't that good, or I don't know, what? These people, you're probably more inclined to justify it or champion it because you did spend that money. Nobody wants to spend $400 on a concert and they go, it wasn't so good. Nobody wants to spend $1,000 on a meal and then when asked about it, go, I was disappointed. When you put that much money down, you're inclined to champion your decision, I suppose. In our studio, strolling in now, is Michelle Nichols. She's the director of public observing at the Adler Planetarium. She was on with Bill and Wendy not that long ago. Welcome back to WGN.
Thank you so much.
Did you take a spacecraft to get over here today?
If I did, I would have gotten here a little faster. That Lala setup traffic is a little rough.
Hey, here's my theory. I think that Chicago is overfested, that we have too many damn swell things going on, and that it makes it difficult for people to actually use this great city. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think if people used public transportation a little more, it might be a little better. I think maybe some of those visitors from out of town might be a little reluctant to use it, but I wish people would take the bus and the train a little more. Might keep a few cars off the road.
Was it Museum of Contemporary Art up by Water Tower last night? They, on Tuesday nights, do a sort of a jazz and wine and little finger food thing. It's lovely over there. And as we were talking about great venues to have a glass of wine, listen to music, and enjoy the city, we said, yeah, but if you go out to the museum campus or up by Adler, they do a thing there where you can have music and look back at the city. And that's one of the great venues in town. I think it's actually over by Shed, but you guys have a great location there.
Yeah, we do. And we have on the third Thursday of every month, we have what's called Adler After Dark. It's for 21 and over. And we have a lot of cool stuff going on. We usually have a DJ or a band or something going on inside. Lots of activities going on. So some telescope observing if it's clear.
Refreshments, too.
Refreshments, always. Yes. Bars. A lot of fun.
Speaking of Mars, so they had this story the other day, and they said that they think that Mars is largely frozen, right?
Mars?
It's hard. It's cold.
It's cold. Parts of Mars can reach up to 70, 80 degrees Fahrenheit. But the problem is the air pressure is so low, it doesn't hang on to any of that heat. And so at night, the temperature can get down to, in the coldest parts of Mars, 190 below. So it's a wide temperature swing during the day. And also the coldest parts can get really, really cold.
So there's no liquid water on the surface.
Right. Well, maybe.
Liquid water on the surface of Mars?
Maybe. So that was interesting news that came out last week. So there are polar caps, there are ice caps at the north and the south pole of Mars. And what was found underneath one of those polar caps by a European Space Agency craft, they used radar, and the data suggests a layer of it could be liquid water. It could be liquid water mixed in with some rock and sand and stuff, at least 3 feet thick underneath that ice. But the ice would keep the liquid from evaporating. So the air pressure is so low, any liquid out on the surface would instantly boil away because of the low air pressure.
Sure, sure. So you've got this layer of ice.
Yep.
And then underneath
that
ice is maybe some liquid water. Why hasn't that water frozen?
That's an excellent question. Possibly the data might suggest that it's mixed in with a lot of salt or some other substance that would keep the water, like act like antifreeze and lower the freezing point of the water. So even though the temperature is really, really low, if you've got enough other stuff mixed in, it'll keep the layer liquid.
I thought it might have been an instance where the core of the planet is hot and it's radiating heat from underneath.
That's another really interesting point, because there's a NASA spacecraft that's going to land in November called InSight, and it's going to measure the heat flow out of the core, out of the center of Mars. And so that's also important information to know if this layer has a chance of actually being liquid.
Isn't that the case of some moon around Jupiter or something like that?
Yeah, there's the moon Europa around Jupiter. There's also one near Saturn called Enceladus. They both have liquid water layers underneath ice.
But then if, say, that were the case, and water is the key to life, is that right?
Absolutely. Life as we know it, anyway.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if there was life that didn't need liquid water, if it was formed of different stuff, different, if it wasn't carbon-based like we are, it may not need water. It may need something completely different, but we wouldn't necessarily know what to look for because everything that we know needs liquid water.
But the only thing we found in the universe is rocks anyway, right?
So far.
We haven't found sticks. We haven't found plants. Nope. We haven't found crawly creatures. Nope. We haven't found anything other than just rudimentary stuff.
Right.
Yeah. But then say there was some life underneath the ice, would that be swimming or would it just be algae or what would it be like?
Great question. It would probably be bacteria of some sort. Those are pretty hardy things, especially here on Earth. They can be found in some really extreme environments, really hot, really cold, really salty, nuclear reactors, all sorts of places where you can find creepy crawlies here on Earth. But more than likely, we would find something very primitive, something like bacteria. But it's hard to say until we dig down in that ice and study this stuff. Who knows?
Does the sophistication of the life matter that much to scientists, or is it life yes, life no? And if it's life yes, it doesn't matter. It's amazing that there's life.
I think if any scientist were to find life, signs of life on another world, I don't think anyone cares what kind it is at this point. We just want to find something out there.
But then say you did get some of this green, gooey, bacterial or algae-like stuff and you brought it back to Earth. Is it possible that it would be just like ours and it wouldn't be that interesting or exciting?
I think if it was just like ours, to scientists at least, that would be interesting and exciting because that would at least be another data point that life like ours is at least somewhere out there in the universe. But if it's different than ours, that's also interesting. No matter what we find out, it's interesting.
Yeah, so. Right. But did we come from bacteria, like... how did we get here? I know that we came from, like, you know, apes and Homo erectus and all the Homo sapiens, all those things. But then if you keep going back, were we probably the stuff of algae, just little green gooey things?
And keep going back, it might have been bacteria-sized stuff even before then. But exactly how we got from a mix of amino acids and things to something that is alive, and there is even debate in some circles about what actually constitutes alive,
right?
Then how exactly that happened, we don't know.
Yeah. Would it be exciting if, or have they found just some of those building blocks like amino
yes.
acids? Have they found those out there?
Absolutely.
They have?
Yes.
On Mars? Somewhere?
I can't remember if they have on Mars. Definitely in gas clouds and other places. Oh, I take that back. I'm remembering. They have found that in at least in the past, Mars had the ingredients of being hospitable to life.
Okay.
So it at least was at least had an environment where life could exist in the past.
The temperature is very hostile to forming life as we know it on Mars, and you said in part because the atmosphere is so thin. I have a solution to that.
What is that?
Okay, just tell me I'm crazy after this. Michelle Nichols is here. She is the director of observing over at the Adler Planetarium. I'll tell you what, that should be on your bucket list each and every summer and spring and winter and fall. But if you haven't made a trip over there to see the city or see the stars, I recommend it for both purposes. Michelle's been talking to us about that news last week. Bill and Wendy had you on just talking about Mars, but more the Mars that it was close.
Mm-hmm.
I was more interested in the possibility of life on Mars and this European, was it a spacecraft?
Yes. It's called... now I'm blanking as to the name, but it's a...
I think it ends in an I.
Yeah, well, it's a spacecraft that's been orbiting Mars since the early 2000s.
I didn't know they had one up there.
They do, and the Indian Space Agency has a spacecraft as well. It's the Mars Orbiter mission, so there you go.
Okay, so you said that the problem with supporting life as we know it on Mars is that the atmosphere isn't thick enough to hold any of the heat, so when it gets up to 70 degrees... all that heat's lost over the course of a day.
Yep.
Okay. So we need more atmosphere up there. So we should put some SUVs up there or get something to just start generating some smoke or some clouds or some carbon throw it up in the atmosphere. What do you think of my idea?
Actually, there are some science fiction writers and other folks who think about how you might change a place, change a world, in order to make it more like Earth. It's called terraforming. And so maybe it's putting some really hardy algae or something there that might generate oxygen.
As to the name, but it's a...
I think it ends in an I. Never mind that. Keep going.
No, it's all right. And the whatever it is may generate more atmosphere and just get it to be a thicker
right.
air pressure.
So. And I wonder, so you think that might be like, well, in fact, that's what happened on Earth, right? Our atmosphere changed over zillions
yes,
of years because
definitely.
Of microbes and things that were doing stuff,
yep.
throwing off waste product, and then that became part of our atmosphere and environment. But machines wouldn't do that. You think it would be more... critters of some sort?
It would probably be easier with critters. You could keep replenishing them and not have to keep running a machine for a while. But hey, there's probably people who have figured out how to stick a machine or 7 or 10 or 1,000 up there to be able to do this.
There are people that are actually thinking about that when they talk about how hot Earth is getting, right? That maybe we ought to float a bunch of little mirrors out on the ocean and reflect the energy back up into space to keep Earth from getting too hot.
Well, the problem with that is that once the energy gets down here, it's already here. When you've got a lot of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, that's gonna trap heat because that's what carbon dioxide does. And so the increasing carbon dioxide level, that's the key that should be stopped or at least slowed down at the very least, but preferably try to get that carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
So one last thing then about life on Mars. Do you think we're going to find, I mean, does this Italian spacecraft that detected maybe water a few feet under the frozen surface, what's next? When are we going to find out?
It would probably be years in the future because we would need a special, a designed spacecraft to land there, drill down into the ice and study this stuff.
Yeah.
So I can almost think that there's got to be a NASA engineer right now going, what would I do for this? But the time it takes to get that going, it could take 10 years before we see a spacecraft that's ready to go.
Boy, imagine that. You get all the way up there and you drill down, then it comes
nothing
up
there.
Nothing. Yeah.
Hey, but that's what science is all about. Sometimes you get what you weren't expecting, and sometimes what you were expecting, you go, nope, that wasn't right.
Michelle Nichols is the Director of Public Observing at Adler Planetarium. Have you been there this summer? Get on over there. Any last thing you want to tell us about your swell groovy place?
Our swell groovy place would love to see all your listeners come on over. And we've got places in the city where we take our telescopes out to. So if you can't come to us, we sometimes come to you. And so our Scopes in the City program, just check our website. You can see where we're going. We're going to parks, libraries, tap rooms, and lots of other
folks. That's a good
folks.
Idea. Adlerplanetarium.org, I suppose.
Absolutely.
All right. Nice to see you in studio. Thanks for coming by, Michelle.
Thank you, King John.
Every now and then we'll go to the Randolph Street Market. They had a real neat market the other day over at the park at Wrigley Field. We were at the, what is it? The Morgan Street Manufacturing Event Space not that long ago. And in each of these cases, they're having these artsy-fartsy shows that Brenda and I will sometimes go to. Maybe we'll meet another couple there. And every now and then, I see some of the same vendors there. And I want to champion what they do. These are Chicagoans who are putting their sweat equity into a product or a recipe or a thing. And I think some of that stuff is pretty good. And I thought, as much as I like it, why don't I do them a favor and tell you a little bit about it? Camille Weddington is on line 5, it says here. Hey, Camille, this is John Williams. How are you?
Hi, John. How are you?
You are the owner of Sweet Cheesecake. You have been in my studio before. How have you been?
I'm great, and it's always great to be here to talk to you and to your listening audience. So, yes, we're Sweet Cheesecake, Sweet Foods, the original homemade Chicago cheesecake.
You guys were serving that at that event I was at a weekend or two ago, and it was then as it has always been. I bought your cheesecakes before. So,
yes.
So good. If you like cheesecakes, this is the best cheesecake. If you don't love cheesecake, try this cheesecake. You guys are on the west side, too, right?
Yes, we are. We've got our very first brick-and-mortar storefront. It's a small, artisan, very humble and cozy place at 5051 West Chicago Avenue Chicago.
Aren't you a business teacher at one of the city colleges or something, too?
Yes, that's one of the things that I also love to do. I teach at Columbia College. I teach entrepreneurship, and I teach marketing. You know, I've taught leadership, digital business development, and one of our family members who is also an owner, my husband, Brian Weddington, he teaches at Harold Washington College. So we love to educate, in short.
It's funny, though, because I think a lot of guys and gals are in this classroom saying, well, here's how you run a business. Here's how an entrepreneur should do it. But you're actually doing it at the same time. And you've got to have a good product if, you know, the business plan is going to work. And that's is that a family recipe you guys cook there?
It's a family recipe, and you know, it's really interesting what you said about entrepreneurship. When you take something that you know and you love and you move it into an entrepreneurial space, it's really a challenge. It's really a very different animal, but yet it's a recipe that was inspired by a pastry that my grandma made. Now, she didn't make a cheesecake, but she made something that we sort of re-engineered into a cheesecake that did not exist in the marketplace. So we're excited about that.
Camille, I got to move on, but you guys have a new, because when I got your cheesecake, I get just the vanilla or white cheesecake and then a strawberry topping or a blueberry. Yes. But don't you guys have a new kind of cheesecake or a new topping that you're coming out with?
I'm so glad you asked, because what's going to be launching this Saturday is called the Marula. And a lot of people don't know, John, that there's a South African cheesecake, and it's made with the Amarula fruit. You know, it's very specific to Africa. So we said, listen, we're going to make a Marula cheesecake. And can you imagine a crust that's soaked in an Amarula liqueur, and it has a little ginger in the batter, and it has a nice, beautiful, fluffy meringue topping. So, you know, guys, stay tuned. You'll be able to pick up the Marula on Saturday. So we're really excited to be in the test kitchen just doing stuff.
The website is sweetcheesecakes.com, right? No, sweetfoods. Yeah. Sweetfoods.com. Yeah. And that's
almost a mouthful. It's sweetcheesecakes.com.
Sweetfoods.com. I'm going to post all of these websites to all of these businesses on my Facebook page right after the show. So if any of these tickle your fancy, check out WGN King John on Facebook. Nice to talk to you again. Continued success, Camille.
Thanks a lot, John. Keep up the great work that you do.
Well, it's talking about people like you that's fun. There's also a company that you may not know about in Chicago called Wolf Point Watches. Samson is on a phone line. Samson Lamb. Hey, Samson, it's John Williams. How are you?
Good. How are you, John?
Congratulations, man. That's a beautiful watch you guys make.
Thank you so much.
So where did you get the idea? Why watches? And just give me, like, the elevator speech. Give me 30 seconds on your watch.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a family business. You know, my grandpa started in the watch industry way back, and then my dad, you know, started his own factory, and then now, like, we're essentially launching our own brand.
You know, they've got those watches out of Detroit, the Shinola ones, which are, you know, making Detroit famous for watches and American-made manufacturing all over again. Yours aren't that expensive. They're about $150. Is that right?
Right. You know, our price point is very affordable. You know, essentially, our motto is, you know, we because of the relationship we have with the vendors over time, we can get good quality materials at the same time at a very affordable price point. Because essentially, you know, unlike a Shinola, we don't make a lot of markup for our brand. So for us, it's more like, well, let's make a quality watch at an affordable price point, you know, for the people, you know, for the Chicago people.
High quality leather. It's a beautiful crystal. It's a very elegant sort of simple design. There's not a lot of markings and inset calendars and things like that on your watch. Is that a fair description?
Yeah. So, you know, our goal is to essentially make a watch that, you know, everybody can use, everybody can relate to. When we started Wolf Point, you know, we thought that, well, you know, Chicago being one of the top cities in the States, like, you know, how come we don't have many watch brands or products coming up from Chicago, and we wanted to kind of change that, and we wanted to have a watch that represent the people here in Chicago, and And we really hope that people will like it. And so far, you know, we have heard good feedback, and, you know, we met you in the show, and, you know, we just continue to push.
Samson Lamb is the director of Wolf Point Watches. And is Wolf Point the point on the river, of the Chicago River? Is there a Wolf Point on the river?
Yeah, so, you know, that area, the Wolf Point where Wacker and Lake is, you know, that area is essentially where everything kind of first started. And for us, you know, it symbolized, you know, us, you know, three generations kind of merged together, along with, you know, symbolizes where everything kind of first started. So for us, you know, it would be like the first watch company started before it was like first school, the bar, church, and other commercial buildings. So for us, it is a different symbol for us.
Well, Wolf Point Watches. What's the website for you guys, Samson?
So wolfpoint.co. So it's wolfpoint, wolfpoint.co. Or you can Google wolfpointwatches.com as well.
I'll post all of these sites on my Facebook page after the show. Good luck and continued success, Samson.
Okay, great. Thanks, John.
Nice to talk to you. When we were out a weekend or two ago, we met a guy named, I think it's Udell Watts. Hey, Udell, are you there?
I am.
This is John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. That's some delicious barbecue sauce and rubs you got, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. We're awful proud of them.
This is so where do you guys make this stuff? I'm calling these Chicago, you know, entrepreneurs. Is this a Chicago-based or is this based somewhere else?
So we are Central Illinois-based. I live in Chicago. My father lives in Western Illinois. And we started the business together. You know, because I live here, I consider it a Chicago-based business.
So you do rubs, seasonings for pork and chicken and beef, and then you do a barbecue sauce, right?
Absolutely. We've got two barbecue sauces, a mild and original, and a hot and spicy. And then we currently have six different dry rubs, really a dry rub for anything that you could hope to put on a grill.
I tried both of them, that is the dry rub, and I tried not the hot one, but the mild barbecue sauce. I thought both of those were just terrific. And I know it's a long story, but give me a real short version of the history of the barbecue sauce. Where did that come from?
So the sauce itself is named Old Arthur's. Arthur was my great-great-grandfather. The recipes for the sauces and dry rubs all emanate with him. He created them all. Short, condensed version of the story is that you know, Arthur began tinkering with his flavors, the sauces and seasonings, in his early teens, mid to early teens. He did so out of absolute necessity, and I'd encourage you to, you know, hit our website to find out his life story. We've got the story as well as photos of him on the website. You know, he did those things out of necessity. His very survival, you know, hinged on his ability to produce. And the reality is, survive he did. He actually leveraged his skill and his recipes until the time of his death. The man lived to be 108 years of age. And you got to understand that he continuously refined these recipes. So what you taste is a portion of history and a set of recipes that one man had nearly a century's worth of effort into refining.
Well, he was, do I remember the story right? He was a slave, was he not?
He was, as a matter of fact. He was a slave until he was 28 years of age, and the only thing that he had to take with him out of bondage was his sauce and his recipes when he was freed through the Emancipation Proclamation, and those things allowed him to earn his keep for the entirety of his life. The man lived 80 years as a free man, and so we are proud as heck to share these things with the public.
It's an amazing sauce, and I love the rub. Udell Watts IV is the owner of Old Arthur's Barbecue Sauce. Visit oldarthurs.com, oldarthurs.com. Again, I'll post the links on my page. You'll just have to try it to believe me when I tell you this stuff's really good. Good luck to you, Udell. Nice to talk to you today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You betcha. And then one other entrepreneur in the area that we bumped into was Sarita Kamat, the designer of Sarita Kamat Designs. Sarita, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good. How are you? I'm so happy to listen to you and talk to you.
Likewise. You make jewelry, right?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about it.
Actually, I make hand-painted glass jewelry. And the glass jewelry that I started making was just an accidental love just happened. I'm originally an artist. I do paintings in acrylics and watercolors and mosaics. And I just came across, I came across glass pieces of glass cabochons, and I thought, you know, how it would be if I could paint on those. And I started painting on those. It was a skill I taught myself. It was difficult at first because I work on pieces like from 6 mm small round pieces to 2-inch pieces.
Yeah.
And so it was a process that I had to learn. I looked up tutorials on YouTube, and I read books, and I taught myself.
I'm sure if I watched the tutorial videos, I would not be able to do it. You can tell that you're an artist. Your stuff is it's glass jewelry, and it's very colorful.
Thank you so much.
It is very pretty. I mean, literally, I almost bought cufflinks. I couldn't decide which ones I wanted. I thought, oh, I'll go online and look for more of your stuff. And I just thought, I've seen a lot of the jewelry. I've seen a lot of the cufflinks and the bracelets and the rings for the ladies and so forth. And I just thought your stuff really had a bright, playful, colorful look. And I just thought it was gorgeous. So congratulations to you.
Yes, thank you. I can say things better with color than I can with words.
I think you do well with both.
So, I'm a big fan of Georgia O'Keeffe, so those are her words.
Oh, I got it. Well, then, fair enough. Sarita Kamat is the designer of Sarita Kamat Designs, and that's the website, too, saritakamatdesigns.com. And again, that website is going to be posted on my Facebook page. Sarita, congratulations. And Elif says it's already up there. So go to WGN King John, and you'll find all of the sites to all of these people that we've been talking to. Good luck to you, Sarita.
Thank you so much, John.
You betcha. Take care. Hey, Katie, this is John. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Oh, hi. I'm good. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Just calling in to say hi, or what can I do for you?
I was looking to, I heard the White Sox song, and I phoned in, and I think I won.
You sure did. Not only did you win, you got tickets to the White Sox versus the Yankees next week. That's going to be a fun game. That's going to be a crowded ballpark. That's going to be a lot of fun.
I'd say, yeah, thank you.
All right, Katie, hold on. I wish you well. Just lose your mind when you get to the ball game, too, Katie. Just cheer like a crazy person. It's 2:57. What are Ro and Anna doing? We'll find out next on WGN. Ro and Anna are just down the hall. What's coming up, guys?
Oh, well, John, first of all, let me just say that it's an action-packed program.
Oh, really?
Action-packed. The guy who wants to close down Lakeshore Drive is going to be here to explain why it is that he's going to do this.
Are you going to try and talk him out of it? Or?
I am, actually, because I don't know what the point of this is, quite honestly. But, I mean, I get what the point. I mean, I understand what it's all about, but I don't know how this is actually going to accomplish the job. So we'll ask him that question. I'm sure he will have an answer at some point. And the Mooch is on the loose. Anthony Scaramucci is going to join us to celebrate his one-year anniversary of being fired from the White House.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So nice get.
Yeah. Thanks. So that's how we roll around here.
I'm so happy for him.
Right. Well, we'll talk about. It's kind of funny because it sounds a little like he's still kind of applying for another job.
Does he know Paul Manafort? I wonder. I think he might.
Although Rudy Giuliani was just live in New Hampshire talking to the press.
Yeah.
And he's standing with the president here. It's time to wrap up this investigation. Just move along. There's nothing to see here.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Right.
That's exactly. And I'm sure they're going to just do. I'm sure that's exactly what Bob Mueller's
going
to do.
You think Mueller's in the conference room going, that's it.
Okay, all right. Wrap it up. Finally, Rudy Giuliani says something. Yes, of course. Because that's always what happens. The guy who's being investigated gets to tell you how to run the investigation. Is that the way that's supposed to go?
He was America's mayor. He was one
okay,
of the...
Okay, can I just tell you something? I personally have known him for a long time.
Rudy?
I donated money to his campaign when he was running for president. I personally like Rudy Giuliani, but having said that, I remember what was going on in New York in the summer of 2001. They could not wait to get rid of him, and September 11, 2001 was election day in New York, and he was leaving. His term limited out because his You know, remember he was going through a divorce and his ex-wife was trying to take custody of Gracie Mansion, the house where the mayor of New York lives, you know, like it's like the White House in New York. And there was like, they were like so done with Rudy. And then, of course, September 11th happens and he became America's mayor and he did an amazing job during all of that.
He did.
But the end days prior to that were, you know, he was not wrapping himself in great glory at that moment.
I don't remember that.
Yes. See, that things that are worth recalling, because the world is not a linear place, nor should it.
Hold on, I'm writing that down. Did you guys write that down? The world is not a linear place.
Thank you.
I'm going to write that down. You have a really good show, Ro.
Thank you very much.